Mark chapter 3, I'm going to read one passage, and then I'm going to skip to another and read a second one. And I'm going to start in verse 13. I'll let you and your life groups cover the whole chapter. And he went up on the mountain, and he called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him. And he appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they may be with him, and he might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. He appointed the 12, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, that is, son of thunder, Andrew and Philip and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas and James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus and Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Then he went home, and the crowd gathered again so that they could not even eat. And when his family heard it, they went out to seize him, for they were saying, he's out of his mind. That's interesting, isn't it? Then let's skip the part about blasphemy. You guys figure that out in your life groups. Verse 31. And his mothers and brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him and called him. And a crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, your mother and brothers are outside seeking you. And he answered them, who are my mother and brother, my brothers? And looking about at those who sat around him, he said, Here are my mother and brothers, for whoever does the will of God, who is my brother. Whoever does the will of God, he is my brother and sister and mother. This is my family. At the beginning of the year, our shepherds gave us, they handed out these vision cards, and they carried out a service for us, and they gave us a vision for 2026. And there were a lot of pieces to the vision, but there are three primary words that they characterize that vision by, and you see it at the top of the card: deeper, wider, and higher. And so we want to respect their vision and really lean into that. And so in chapter 1 of the Gospel of Mark, we really looked at the example of Jesus in prayer, where it's helping us to learn to grow higher in our relationship with God. But then last week, we noticed that it's inevitable that flowing out of growing higher in your relationship with God, you can't help but become a person who reaches out with the gospel to the world around you, is growing wider in our outreach to the world through sharing the gospel by our words and by our service. And so then thirdly, as we see here, there's a lot of stuff in chapter 3, okay? I just don't have time to cover it all. I chose to look at this theme in chapter 3, showing us the importance of growing deeper in community with other disciples. And here we see in chapter 3, it's a community that is so tight-knit that it's not like your family. It actually is your family. So there's three things I want us to look at here. There are three reasons why I said, that's it. This is what I want us to look at today. Three reasons. First of all, we're going to look at the mark of a disciple. This is really crucial. We're going to look at a vital mark of a disciple. And then secondly, we're going to look at a needed truth to live by. And then thirdly, another reason for picking this passage is because I'm going to share with you a very personal reason for the selection of this text this morning. So first of all, let's look at the vital mark of a disciple. When you look throughout Matthew through Revelation, or even Genesis through Revelation, you'll see a lot of definitions of, or descriptions of what a disciple is. But there are three passages in the New Testament that really are explicit about it. They give you what we call the marks of a disciple. There are three of them. I'm going to share with you one today, and in a couple of weeks, I'm going to share with you the other two tied in together. The first one is in John chapter 13 and verse 35. He says, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for, here's the phrase, I want you to notice, one another. How do you look at someone and say, now that's a follower of Jesus. That is an authentic disciple. You see it not because you're looking at them alone, but you see how they're tied in loving community relationships with other people. I would encourage you, this phrase, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples, you have love one for another. Go to Google or anywhere on the internet for a search engine, type in the word Bible, one another, and these are just a few of the New Testament one another words. It's just talking about the role and the responsibility we have within the community of God. It's going to go, I was going to go through it all day, I just don't have enough time to do that. It goes everywhere from love one another all the way down to the one we never do much anymore here. We ought to kiss one another. It's just all kinds of passages again and again and again. I would encourage you to read them that talk about the important role and the vital importance of community in the body of Christ. And so we see this here in this passage that Jesus is creating community as he calls his first disciples. And I love that it says here, listen to this, this is really, really significant. I'd never noticed it before until this time going through Mark chapter 3. He called to him those whom he desired. And then it also says he called them that they might be with him. Jesus' call upon your life to follow him is because he wants you with him. That's his desire to be close to you. God is very clear in Scripture. God is a relational being, and he wants to be in a close relationship with you, but it's not just with you, but with others as well. And here we see he's calling, and we don't have time to, I'm not going to unpack all of the different disciples that are mentioned here, but these guys are incredibly different from one another, but they had one thing that brought them all together. There was just an amazement that they had with Jesus that drew them to Jesus. And as they followed Jesus, they couldn't help but be brought together in community. You cannot follow him. You cannot be with him without being with others. And so this is pretty fundamental, but we need a reminder of it. In Acts chapter 2, for example, in this amazing story of thousands who've come to hear the gospel, and there were about 3,000 that obeyed the gospel and baptized that day, and it says they were added to their number that day, meaning added to the number of disciples, telling us when they were baptized into Christ, it wasn't, okay, good luck on your own with Jesus, but they were given a supportive family of believers to surround them. We've seen that in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 13, and comparing the church to a human body, it says there all were baptized into one body. You're not just baptized into Christ, but you're taking on, you're accepting, you're being baptized into a body, into the family of God. And so we see that this call to discipleship, it's a call into community, into relationships with one another. And I think it's really important that we hear a reminder of that, because in our world today, and especially in Christian circles, there's a lot of talk about having a personal relationship with Jesus, which suits our individualistic nature of our culture. But this may come as a surprise to you. The Bible knows nothing of an exclusive personal relationship with Jesus. But rather, it speaks of a communal relationship, a shared relationship with Jesus in community with other followers of his. And you hear it a lot. I hear this a lot. I'm really into Jesus. I really want to be a Christian, but I'm not into the church thing. That's a biblical impossibility. Because Jesus is in the middle of the church, surrounded by his followers. And I've said this to you before, but it's equivalent to saying, I really want to live in Colorado Springs, but I want to have absolutely nothing to do with El Paso County. Have you ever looked at the map? Colorado Springs is not smack dab in the middle, but pretty much in the middle of El Paso County. You can't have one without the other. You can't be a part of Jesus and not be surrounded by his family, because that's where Jesus is. This is incredibly important. Why? Because being a part of the church is just a rule you have to follow? No, there are multiple reasons why community is so important. The larger context of this chapter shows us at least two of them. Remember last week I told you when you're reading through like the Gospel of Mark, look for repetitive words and phrases. And I mentioned to you that the word crowd is a word that comes up again and again and again. And it's huge here in chapter 3. Notice this. It says in chapter 3 and verse 7, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd, it's like he's trying to get away, let's get a break, and a great crowd followed him. Then you see in verse 8, a great crowd came to him. And then verse 9, he says, man, it's like a stampede. He says, get me in a boat because of the crowd, lest they crush us. And then in verse 20, it says, after he taught there, he went home, and the crowd gathered again so that they could not even eat. It's just crowds, crowds, crowds. They can't eat. They're being crushed. And in the middle of this, what does Jesus do? I love this. First of all, it says he went up on a mountain. In the parallel text in the book of Luke, he says he went up on a mountain to pray. You got to find a mountain to pray. We're going to see more of that in Mark chapter 6. But here he was praying, I believe, for wisdom. And he came down from the mountain and he chose 12 disciples. Why did he do that in the midst of this context of the crowds? Because Jesus, yes, the Son of God, realized in his humanity, I need help. I cannot do this on my own. I must multiply myself. The mission that he calls his disciples to, that he calls us to proclaim the gospel, is not something, as Brandon did such a great job in communion, that we do alone. We'll see in Mark chapter 6 that he sent them out two by two. But there's another reason why Jesus called his disciples in the larger context here of chapter 3. It's because of the opposition. Notice in Mark, another repetitive theme, Jesus is constantly being opposed, constantly being criticized, constantly being threatened. My favorite story here in chapter 3, which I wanted to preach, but I decided to go with this instead, is the guy with the shriveled arm, the withered hand, it says. And at the end of healing this guy, these people said, we need to get rid of him, let's take him out. And then we move on, read on further, and Jesus is in the middle of ministering people, and people are criticizing, saying, you are of the devil. And you see this again and again and again. Jesus is constantly being opposed and criticized by people. And so in the middle of this, all of this negativity, he gathers around him a supportive group of disciples, a family, to counterbalance all that was coming against them. Church, that's a huge, important role of the church, to be an encouragement in the center of all the things in the world that are so discouraging, to find a positive influence against all of the negative influences. And if Jesus, the Son of God, felt like, I need help, I need to be in community, if he felt like that, how much more so do we? Now, you may be saying, well, Eddie, you're preaching to the choir. I'm here. Are you really here? You can be a part of attending and checking off a checklist of attendance to a church assembly, but not really be a part of the life of the body. We read in Scripture, it's talking about an active role that we play in serving. And so that's why we read, for example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it describes a church as a body, and the body has all these different parts, and the parts are all working together. As a matter of fact, I had someone come up here named Macy to help me teach you a point from that. Does anybody remember the point that came from 1 Corinthians 12 that Macy, you should never forget Macy, right? What was the saying we learned from that? Does anybody remember it without a hint? Oh, come on. Wait a minute, I think we got it over here. Who can tell it? Who, raise your hand if you got it. Okay, Matt. You know, I went out Friday morning, and I was one of the few crazy people hiking in the mountains in the snow. And guess who I ran into? Matt Vonto. Surprise, surprise. Matt, what's the saying? Everybody needs the body, and the body needs everybody. All of us have an incredibly significant role we play in serving the church body, and all of us need what the church body has to bring. We're not intended to be alone. I would encourage you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Don't have time to go through all that today. And read that and study that and find your part in the church body. But secondly, in Ephesians chapter 4, this is another phenomenal text, our letter, and it's also describing the church as a building that we're all brought together. And it talks about us also being a community and being a family. And really, when you lean into chapter 4, it talks about the importance and the role that, Christ has come and he ascended to heaven and he's given us all gifts and talents in the church body to serve. And it says in verse 16, listen to this. This is important. You've heard me say this once. You've heard me say it 100 times. And I am not ashamed of repeating it again and again. Verse 16, the body grows and builds itself up as each part does its work. So it's not just about being here, but it's doing your part. Now, it might seem a little bit harsh or hard, but there are times when someone will come to me or I'll hear someone and say, well, you know, this church isn't just, it's just not growing. And which would be really interesting about that, usually the people that, in my 12 years here, whenever I hear that from someone, it's someone that I have never observed brought a single soul to this assembly before. And to my knowledge, has never attempted to reach out and share the gospel. You see, the body grows and builds itself up as each part does its role. And so that's why our elders gave us this vision card for 2026. And it's indicated on the cards here of how we can practically put these things in practice. They called us to actively participate in a life group. There's no better way that I know of in this church family than to be in a life group to develop community and close relationships. They called us to practice Christ-like hospitality to others, to share a meal with a church member that you don't know well, and to grow your faith alongside another believer. These are practical ways you can live out what it truly means to be a disciple, to be in community. So first of all, we see here in this passage, as Jesus called to his disciples, it's a mark of a disciple. But secondly, we see a needed truth to live by. And that truth is, this is my family. This is my family. I was going to entitle this sermon, We Are Family. But every time I say that, all I can hear is Sister Sledge singing. And I figured you guys would too. And next thing you know, I've lost your attention. Probably just did. I don't believe when Jesus' family came for him, they're kind of thinking, this dude has lost his mind. We need to get him. Everybody's trying to kill him. I don't believe when they said, hey, your family's here for you, Jesus, that he said, who are my mother and brothers? I don't think he meant, and this is my family. I don't think he meant that in a negative way, critically against them, as much as to say the closeness and the ties that can happen as people gather around Jesus by faith. And if you've been a part of a church family long enough, you know those type of familiar relationships. They're just they're not like family. They are family. There's a familiar passage in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24 through 25, and he says, and some of you know this well, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. Listen to these one another verses, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Now, some of us know this, we know this well, we have it memorized in King James, how it used to go, do not give up forsaking the assembly of the saints as some are in the habit of doing. But encourage one another daily, all the more as you see the day approach. And I got that memorized because I heard it again and again. And I heard it basically again and again and again is, you better go to church. It says it right here. Like a rule. But if you read all of the letter to the Hebrews, this is in the context of people that were hurting. The people, hurting is like a small expression. They were going through so many hardships and so much persecution. And what was happening, obviously, by this corrective here, is that some of the church members were beginning to pull away. And that wasn't good for them. And it certainly wasn't good for the church. And he says, no, you don't want to do that. When we're going through difficult times out there in the world, that's not a time when you disappear. That's a time when you lean in closer to one another more than ever. We saw this during COVID, didn't we? It was like not external persecution, not completely, maybe a little bit, but it was a hard time that our church went through, a hard time that our world went through. And during this difficult time of COVID, there were some church family members who disappeared without a word and never came back. And I don't know, you thought, oh, that's just the way it is. That's not the way I took it. I felt that. And my thoughts were, I thought we were close. I thought we were family. It's like, you ghosted me. You ghosted us at a time when we needed you the most. This is my family. Or you see it too often when someone gets their feelings hurt, or someone has a disagreement about a decision that's being made by the elders. And usually, someone gets upset about a decision made by the elders, and they're not even aware of what that decision is. They think they do, and they reach a wrong conclusion. Instead of talking you out and saying, hey, let's sort this out, they just disappear without a word. That happens in church life. But that's not what a family does. I took this sermon title. This is my family. I got it from Dorothy Knoll. Dorothy Knoll used to live in Baton Rouge and served in a church there. And Dorothy said to me, maybe more than once, but she at least said it once. She said, Eddie, I've been around here, like you know, for 30 or 40 years in this church. There have been things that happened that I didn't like. There's some times when decisions are made that I don't agree with. None of that was ever biblical truth that was compromised. It was just practical things that the church does. She says, you know, there are times when we have some songs going on up here that I just don't really like. They're not my kind of... She didn't like the newer songs, but some people don't like the older songs. She didn't like the newer songs. Eddie, I don't like it when we do communion and we're playing that video. It's got that distractive music going on. I don't really like that. And Eddie, I don't like it that you don't wear a suit and tie like Dr. David Jeremiah. She just loved Dr. David Jeremiah. But you know what she told me? You know what Dorothy said? She said, Eddie, I'm still here and I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. And I can hear her sweet voice. She says, because this is my family. This is my family. This wasn't just a random thought that I thought, let's just talk about this today. Church, I see on the horizon a need for us to understand this. Our church family is in transition right now, and it's going to be even more transition in the future of this year as we've lost a worship minister. And Karen and I are going to be leaving sometime later this year to be closer to my father because we're going to take care of him. And you know what happens, sadly, in church life? When a minister leaves, it happens that sometimes church members just leave as well. It's kind of a time of uncertainty, a time of instability, of insecurity. It's almost kind of like with COVID that some just kind of allowed that to build an exit ramp. Here's my exit ramp now to leave this church family. Or maybe I'll wait and see what's the next guy going to be like. Will he be as good looking as Eddie? Probably not. And certainly not as humble. Our worship minister, like, what's going to come with that? I'm going to wait and see. And if it's not to my liking, then I'm out. This is my family. This is my family. Look around at your family. How do you walk up, and I don't know why I picked Betty, I guess she's my favorite church member here. How do you walk up to Betty, look her in the face and say, I don't like this worship ministry, these songs, I'm out. Or this person over here hurt my feelings, I'll see you. How do you do that? I don't get that. Like with COVID. So like, if you hadn't been paying attention, this is really, I need to say this. Like with COVID, when we needed you then more than ever, in this time of uncertainty and transition for our church, this is when your church family needs you now more than ever. And so I would challenge you with these words that I just made up. I mean, I don't know how I got them. I'm just a pretty smart guy and humble. Here's my saying. Here's my words to you today. Ask not what your church can do for you. Eddie, that's brilliant. Ask not what your church can do for you, or else you're leaving. But ask instead what you can do for your church, because this is my family. It's a needed truth to live by. It's a mark of a disciple. But there's a personal reason I share this passage with you. This is very real to me and Karen. You know, the elders said, hey, Eddie and Karen are going to have to leave next year, and I'm supposed to make that announcement. They did my dirty work for me. I thought, I need to publicly say something. And this text is the perfect place to do it for me and Karen, because we have learned that these are not just, yeah, this is really a cool hypothetical thing, but is it really true? Oh my goodness, it is very true. Before we came here, you know, we were with one church for 28 years. 10 of those years, we were their missionaries, but we were very connected with them for those 28 years. And we believe it was God's call to bring us here. No question about that. It was very difficult to leave that family there. And when we left there, we were certain there is no way we'll regain what we had there. Because 28 years, how do you recapture that? But we were wrong. In an incredibly short time, you guys became family to us in ways that was actually surpassed that in Baton Rouge. Please don't tell the people in Baton Rouge I said that, all right? There's some of them here? Okay. You were family to us when mom died. You were family to us when Karen's mom died. You've been family to us and saying, yes, go back to your family in the Czech Republic and be with them. You were family to us and you said, go away for a sabbatical. We want you to burn out. And we went to Hawaii for a month. Who does that? Who can afford that? We can't. But you anonymously donated enough money that we made that happen. You were family to us when I was diagnosed with cancer. Still. You were family to us when Karen and I and our daughter and grandchildren have gone through the most horrific of life nightmares, and you've been there for us. All the crowds and the hardship and the challenges of ministry, all the opposition and conflicts that accompany it, as Jesus surrounded himself with support, he surrounded us indeed with you. And so, like Jesus in this passage, as Karen and I look about at those who were seated here, we can say this is our family. You always will be our family, regardless of how far away we live. And if you're not a Christian, I want you to hear the beauty of this, all right? It's incredible that when you come to Christ and you accept him as your Lord and Savior, not only are you given this blessing of forgiveness and you get this closeness with God, but you're giving an incredibly supportive family to be by your side. And God knows you need this because he created you. And he said, it's not good for man to be alone. So we want you to know, whoever you are, we're glad that you're here. We're here for you. It's the mark of a disciple. It's a truth to live by. And it's a beautiful blessing which we all need, to which Karen and I can testify, and we are so, so grateful. And this is God's word to us today. Would you stand? Okay, so Lord, I did it. I got through that. Thank you. Thank you for this beautiful passage, and thank you for how real it is. And how we experience that. And Father, if there's anyone here that doesn't understand this and doesn't know this and is not living this, oh God, let these words penetrate deep, deep into their hearts to draw them close to you and close to others who will be by their side. And so we want now to practice this closeness, church. We're going to offer this song to God in prayer, and I want to encourage you that if you know someone that's here this morning with a heavy heart that needs you, just to go up to them, give them a hug and tell them you love them or to pray with them. If you're that person, I want to encourage you. If nobody knows what you're going through, reach out and pray to someone, or our shepherds. There's some in our prayer room who are there to reach out to and to pray with you. Let's go before God now in this time of prayer.